It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
The best 60 minutes of your day. The Jason Willie, Jay Billis Homer Hour. Yes, Jay Billis to give us the latest on, he was part of the draft lottery and said like it's the best draft in 20 years for the top 30 picks or whatever. So my assumption is that he will suggest that the Bucks, if they're moving Giannis, get as many picks as possible. And they don't have to be top 10. They could be 13, which they have, I think, right? They're 13. And they try to get 10, get 20, 25, get four picks in the top 30. This is the best draft in 40 years that deep. You got a chance to get the best players you could of any year. You don't need them in future years. It may not be that good. We'll see. Pick 10, if that's exactly what he says. And as far as the Brewers, the Miz did not pitch today.
He's a freak.
Given that I don't have a show tomorrow, I could wait until tomorrow or put it on Twitter, but this is a violation of my own rules. The Miz will pitch tomorrow. And the Brewers lost today. Again, everything is secondary to the Miz.
He's a freak.
Yes, he is. We have not gotten John Smoltz on yet, but I look forward to it at some point so that he can talk about, as he did, we can play, before we even get him on, the rest of the interview that he did where he talks about the concern about injury and that he's hoping that the Miz will not have
He's a freak.
Thank you. Smoltz loves to be on the show. He's ready. He's ready every second. Watch this.
He's a freak.
The Miz.
He's a freak.
See? Don't you... It's amazing that somebody who is that good is ready to be on this show, The Miz.
He's a freak.
Oh, man. All right. So they lost 4-2. It's fine. I'm just following to see what they do in terms of adding something to the team, which I believe they do. It's 162 games. It's hard to believe. They're like at game number. They're not even halfway. You just can't get overly concerned. Only the people playing or Murph that understand just it goes on and on and on and on and on. So they understand that and figure out what's best. Everything is important only as it relates to the playoffs and the ability to beat Atlanta and specifically the Dodgers. Founded by inventors, fueled by community, and focused on business for 130 years, Horicon Bank has helped Wisconsin businesses grow, doing banking differently since 1896. Today, that same local approach is now part of the Milwaukee business community, bringing decision-making closer to the people who matter most to you. Financing requests approved in days, not weeks. Bankers who understand your business, products designed to support real cash flow needs. Because when it comes to commercial lending, that's where Horicon Bank is new to Milwaukee. Commercial lending. Horicon Bank gets the job done together, doing good for 130 years. And now, Fisco. It's not what they do. It's who they are. I said that about another business. The furniture business, Built Right, I think it is. They have been a huge supporter of Grand Avenue Club, which just basically helps people. And they've done it. And I said the same thing. Just they were honored. They don't need to get honored. They don't want an hour. They don't need an hour because it's not what they do. It's who they are. And so, yes, Fisco 2, I guess they call them. Fisco, family business, owned since 1931, said at first about them, it's not what they do. It's who they are because they still own the business and they're still doing the repairs. That's one of the reasons they're so good. On Forest Home in Franklin, don't give the address enough. On Forest Home in Franklin, expert workmanship, guaranteed for the life of your vehicle. Any damage, Fisco has you covered. Fisco Auto Body on Forest Home in Franklin. Fisco, 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 so you remember the name. This show is so good. This will maybe be the earliest break in the history of the Homer Hour because Jason Wilde and Jay Billis to come. Jason Wilde, next.
More of the Homer Hour coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app. It's time for Jason Wilde on the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
The Homer Hour, the Thursday Homer Hour, continues with Jason Wilde. Today's Thursday Homer Hour with Jason Wilde and Jay Billis. Of course, Jason Wilde, three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, has his own Jason Wilde Yingling Hotline. Jason, how are you doing today?
I'm good. Can I be on the Jay Billis Yingling Hotline, or is that not allowed?
Sure. You're Jason Wilde. You can do whatever you want. We have the new Jason Wilde Jay Billis Yingling Hotline just for today's show. How's that?
Love it. Thank you.
I was listening to your show with Popke. I remember when he was like, he swept the floor. So you had Lee Remmel, then yeah. Was it Jeff Blum? Was that the guy underneath Lee Remmel?
Yes, correct.
Aaron Good Popke memory. Was the lowest of low. All right, I heard him today. I don't get this. I think it's insanity on both parts. First of all, we start with U.S. Representative Fitzgerald, right?
Yep.
So yep. they had yep. some hearing on looking into the NFL deal that has to do with sharing all the income equally for the NFL teams.
Yes, it's the sports. And again, I get it. This is boring.
I don't get any of it. No, this is the what they're both doing is not boring. It's idiotic, and I'm hoping you can explain it.
I can. So, first of all, the Sports Broadcast Act was passed in 1961.
I remember
it. How old were you in 1961?
I remember it. Pete Rozelle. Everybody gets the same amount of money. Doesn't matter which team. And no other sport has equaled that. I don't think anybody's competent. Baseball, certainly not with the union. I don't think the NBA, everything's equal because of the local revenue for the games.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And obviously there's more games. So
right.
It doesn't fit those paradigms anyway. Those are all.
That's how the NFL could do it.
It did it for other leagues as well, but they don't quite take advantage of it the same way. They do have national broadcast deals that they do share revenue. It's not all that way. But look, the Packers, as Aaron Popke said,
mm-hmm.
their concern is the worst-case scenario.
Right.
And I think, and again, I've said this multiple times, and I stand by it. Like, I am not, like, pro-Packers guy, carry water for the Packers guy. I mean, I
carry water against it, Packer fans. They need to realize every day how lucky they are, and whatever they make them do, how unfair it might be, shut up and take it, because you have no business having an NFL team.
Yeah, but they do. But
okay, all right.
The issue, I think the Packers, I think very clearly, the Packers' issue with Scott Fitzgerald
right.
is that he was so dismissive of their concerns about a worst case scenario. You can say till the cows come home that the shared revenue that the NFL does is not in peril. But until that actually is clear, the Packers have to be, and they have to be the one team that's worried about it more than any other.
No, they
that's
don't.
The reality.
No,
yes,
not when
do.
No, not when the person's from Wisconsin. I'm like Scott Fitzgerald. I'm not like a representative. What are you, an idiot? Do you think I'm going to ever do anything as a representative in this state that would have a negative impact on the Packers? You think I'm that stupid because I lose my election that day? What? I mean, I would say that to the Packers. What the hell are you thinking now?
Well, then why?
Now, why Fitzgerald then got so upset with the Packers and said that is just as stupid? You know, I can't believe they would do this. And he's right. Like, how stupid do you think he would be? There are things they may want to change, and that is with streaming that maybe the bigger markets want more because they create more streaming numbers. I don't know. But the thought that the Packers would think for a second that Fitzgerald is so stupid that he would do anything that would harm the Packers as far as losing the team.
I think we have ample evidence
what?
On both sides of the aisle that legislators can be stupid. Senators, presidents.
Not the one who represents where the Packers are from. You might have a problem if you have a representative from Wyoming.
Well, then why have two other congressmen, Derek Van Orden and Tony Weed, both of whom are Republicans, come out very clearly in support of the Packers and their issue with this? Why are they supporting the Packers in their taking issue with what Scott Fitzgerald is doing? Look, the bottom line is, do I think that ultimately there will be some sort of major sea change that puts the Packers in a bind? I do not. Do I think Scott Fitzgerald, who I do not know personally,
I don't either,
could have easily handled this much more adroitly and been much more wise about how he handled it?
As the Packers could. There was no need for them to do anything publicly.
Here's the reality.
All right.
They have been working behind the scenes so they didn't have to do this publicly. And as my understanding is that Scott Fitzgerald never bothered to take their calls.
Yeah, I don't know. He's got something against the Packers. I don't know what his deal is. But he should be told, you're going to lose your job. I'd run against him now.
That I'd like to see.
Yeah.
But the issue is, you just said, well, how stupid do you think I am? Well, he's chosen to take this approach this far, so I can't rely on the idea of, well, there's no way this guy's that stupid.
Right.
Like, there's no way I can rely on that if I'm the Packers. I can't. That would be bad practice for me to assume that he's not stupid enough to do this. So, again, I think...
What do you believe he's stupid enough to do?
Well, the problem is
because I don't think
that
he's doing anything. He's exploring but it doesn't mean they're going to get rid of what would...
It's not just him. It's not just him, right? There are other people with other constituencies and other motives than just him, right? And suddenly you lose, let's just say hypothetically, you lose control of your subcommittee that you're doing this with. And suddenly they decide that they're going to go, they can easily overcome the chairman of the subcommittee. And they decide, this is stupid that it's basically socialism for small market teams. Eat or be eaten. Like, and suddenly now they get enough people on board, and the Packers are in a bind again.
Right. Which side is Representative Fitzgerald going to be on?
So I would certainly think that his thought process is: look, I obviously have a lot of Packers fans in my district.
Yeah.
I do not want to put the Packers in a. But he's already done this the way he's gone about it.
He hasn't. He said stupid things.
Even
but
his messaging, right, but messaging is part of it, whether you like it or not.
All right, fine.
And he is just, it would appear that he has mishandled how you just prevent this from being an issue.
As the Packers I would say, equally. Maybe not equally.
Right. They waited until Tuesday to finally say, you know what, we need to say something publicly because this guy... not taking our calls, not real interested in what we have to say, and whatever frustrations they had, they obviously chose to voice them in the manner that they did.
Okay.
This is not that interesting. It's more interesting to talk about, how confident are you in Jordan Morgan as the starting left tackle, right?
I think it's of note because I think a Packer fan should understand that while there will, I don't believe, ever be a changing of equality in terms of the revenue for each teams, certain things could change where they don't get exactly the same as the bigger markets, and streaming might be it.
Right. And again, when you're in the position that they are in, you have to guard against all of those potential scenarios. And that's all they're doing. And again, I don't side with them hardly ever. But this is – and look – I want to be clear. I think that something is 65 years old, almost as old as you, should be not just never touched in any way when it was designed as legislation before we had cable television, satellite television, or streaming? We basically had NBC, CBS, ABC, right? That's all we had, and PBS back in 1961. So do I think that it's reasonable to take a look at it? Sure. Do they have to? Do I think ultimately what would make sense for the NFL is for them to just stay with it? I don't know. I don't think so. But I do think that there's the possibility that the ultimately what we end up having is it's just rewritten in a way that it also covers cable television networks and stream. Like, because again, cable was an, we had this issue when the NFL Network started out. And they weren't on in Madison, and so you didn't, you couldn't even watch the Packers Cowboys game in which Rodgers went into the game on cable because it wasn't available yet on the cable system there, much less on over-the-air TV.
Right.
But look, the fact of the matter is this all goes back to there are four Packers games on streaming services this year. Last year there were two plus the playoff game. And the bottom line is that there's a lot of people outside the Milwaukee TV market and the Green Bay Fox Cities TV market that clearly are SOL when it comes to wanting that game on their
And I want to tell them right now, it's going to get worse before it gets better. And you can blame whoever you want, but it's the reality of being in a situation dramatically different, not dramatically, but different from most of the cities. And, yeah, you may end up having to pay for a few games, and you can blame whoever you want, but it's going to happen. I'm trying to give them a heads up. And
yep.
But the premise that Scott Fitzgerald or any politician is going to do anything to assist the change in terms of the amount of money to the teams is absurd, and I'm sure he thinks it's absurd. And Packers didn't need to go public, and he didn't need to respond the way he did. So I don't know what's going on. I don't know what why they have this battle. But Scott Fitzgerald knows this. He fights against the Packers. That's enough to get him to lose his job. I don't care who he is. And if I was running against him, I'd start today.
Yep, totally agree.
Yeah.
That
why don't you want to run against him?
I don't live in that district.
You can move.
I don't want to move.
That's what they do. Isn't that what people do? Yeah, no, all right, let's move on to other Packer stuff. We addressed that. How did Jordan play last year compared to his other years? Jordan Love, excuse me.
I thought he took a step forward.
Okay.
I don't know if it was a giant leap.
And explain that. Explain why you say that. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm asking.
He only threw six interceptions. I thought his decision-making was good. I think he's continued to be better moving in the pocket. I think, you know, you've seen what he can do when he gets good protection, and you can see what happens when they don't protect him. So those are all problematic. When you don't protect your quarterback, I don't care how good he is. Even Aaron Rodgers struggled when he wasn't well protected. But, yeah, I think he took another step forward. My fundamental issue with how people view him is that I just don't think he's quite as good as they want him to be right now. And people want to because I still think there's some inconsistency in his game.
Okay,
which it's okay. He's going into his fourth year as a starter. Like, you know, there's I look at Justin Herbert, who I watched play a lot in college at Oregon. Like, he's a good quarterback, but he's got way more inconsistency.
I would say at this point he could easily be the most overrated quarterback in terms of how people talk about him and what they think, and maybe it's the result of the team or the people that surround him.
But I just I know there's various metrics that people are using to say, oh, he's, you know, here's what he was under pressure, and here's what he was when he had a clean pocket. I get it. He's a good quarterback, and now it's time for him to elevate to a higher level. And I think, you know, what
so what would he have
thought,
to do to get to a higher level? What will you watch?
You know, I saw the throw that I made a big deal about in practice, which I still think was right to do. I think we need to see more of those in crucial moments, right? I think that's
okay.
I'm not arguing.
I'm listening because
for Tausch and I, we were critical of Matt LaFleur for not just running the ball and then putting your defense on the field and making the Cleveland Browns drive the length of the field in a game that you would have won had you done that. Instead, you decided to put the ball in your quarterback's hands, which is what quarterbacks want, and he threw a bad pick, right?
Yes.
Those are the kind of mistakes that cost them the game. They don't lose that game if he doesn't throw that pick.
Correct.
Well, that's the kind of mistake he has to avoid. And I would argue, as the season wore on, you didn't see him make those kind of boneheaded mistakes. Like, I thought he had a very good season. But again, I think the problem is, and this is unique also to Green Bay, is
we want to believe that the next guy is just as good as the last guy, because it happened when we went from Favre to Rodgers, and he's not there yet. I'm not saying he's not capable of getting there, but I think we forget how special is.
Yeah.
And right now he's good. But this is a big year. And I think Jordan Love would tell you this is a big year. I bet if I ask him that when we reconvene at training camp, I think even he would acknowledge that, look, I need to elevate my game. I'm a good quarterback right now, but I can be so much better. And I need to be that for this team. And I think I've got the weapons to do it. If I have a healthy Tucker Kraft and a healthy Christian Watson at the same time and a healthy Jaden Reed, and we're actually, giving Josh Jacobs a little bit of running room, I feel pretty damn good about what our offense can do. So he's got to do that. He's got to stay healthy.
But I would say my majority opinion is I don't expect him to be as good because of the offensive line. I mean, the issue to me with the offense is the offensive line in terms of limiting what he can and do.
Look,
if
Zach Tom is healthy, they've got a really good right tackle.
Correct.
We don't know what Jordan Morgan is or isn't.
Right.
We'll have to wait and see. I think Sean Ryan is a serviceable center.
Yes.
I think that Aaron Banks is a solid veteran left guard. I don't know if he's going to elevate to being a Pro Bowl level guard.
A little better than serviceable, but to this point, not much.
Yeah.
Okay. And?
Not much. And then Anthony Belton is one of those guys that you're counting on to make the year one to year two jump. And if he does, then you got a pretty good right guard. Otherwise,
but there are a lot of ifs that you just presented that could easily limit how much the offense can do.
Yeah, that's
so if he doesn't have as good a year this year, can I say it's just the offensive line's just not at the level it needs to be, and he has to be.
No, I think you could say that it was a factor in it, but I don't think you can put it all at their feet, no.
All right. And now wide receiver. Assess that.
I think they will have plenty of weaponry at wide receiver. I think Matthew Golden will take a jump. I think Bo Melton is a better player than he gets credit for. I think they'll come up with ideas to use Savion Williams more creatively. I think you put that all together and they got a chance to. I just think having more defined roles, which they haven't had, obviously, with this, everybody's a number one receiver. I think they're in really good shape if they stay healthy. If they have injuries to their top guys now that they've kind of gone away from everybody's a number one.
Well, who is the number
one? Then
they're
in trouble. It's Watson.
All right. And when he's hurt, who's number one?
Probably Golden.
Now, that's kind of iffy to me because it's fair to think the possibility of Watson getting hurt, right?
Yeah, I would. Look,
now we got Golden is number one. Woo!
Yeah, I would like their wide receivers. I was fine with letting Romeo Dobbs walk.
Yep.
I would feel much better about their group if they still had Dontavian Wicks playing on the final year of his deal, because he'd have a lot to prove, and if he played at a high level, he'd make himself a ton of money.
Yeah, because we're going to have that discussion. If Watson gets hurt or doesn't play, the number one discussion is, are we at Lazard as the number one again?
Right. Wicks would have been an amazing insurance policy.
Yep.
And if Watson stays healthy, we're not going to have that conversation.
Right.
But if he doesn't, they're going to miss him. And they did get two draft picks for him, which I think obviously is a pretty valuable thing to get back for a player that would not have been your number one receiver. But if we're being realistic, would they be a better team with him as an option or without him? I would argue for this year they would be a better team with him.
And we agree. The number one wide receiver is Tucker Kraft.
Correct.
I mean, he's the number one
offensive target.
Yeah.
Is undeniably Tucker Kraft.
I mean, maybe I'm putting too much on in the red zone, but I can see Tucker Kraft having 13 touchdowns or what's the most?
I could too.
What's the most tight end?
I could see him have 15.
Yes.
I think there's years where Taylor Swift's fiance had like 15. So, yes, he's capable of that.
And
he could have a 1,500-yard season.
I don't know how, even when they know they're going to throw to him, I'm not sure they can prevent it.
Nope.
But
that's what a great tight end does for you.
And lastly, another day. I should see how many days it is with nothing said about Josh Jacobs. What are we at? We got to check how many days it is from the first day. It's.
I am in the Hobart Lawrence area. So if I come across a police officer while I'm here, I'll ask him what's going on.
All right. It is the Jason Wilde, Jay Billis Yingling Hotline. So I got to get to Jay Billis. Thanks, Jason.
All right, Homer. Take care. Be good.
Jason Wilde, all Packers all the time. Jay Billis isn't next, but he's soon. Next.
The Homer Hour is back after this on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
It is the Jay Billis, Jason Wilde Homer Hour, and I've had some difficulty in the past when I introduced Jay Billis because I didn't know how to introduce him. Jay, good evening.
Good evening.
The best thing to say about Jay Billis, this is AI, is that he is an unfiltered champion for student athletes who prioritizes substance over style. You like that?
AI said that?
Yeah. I asked him, what's the best thing to say about Jay Billis? And then I said, but how about as a basketball player? Standout 6'8 center, I thought you were taller than that, and a four-year starter at Duke.
Yeah, I would have gone with devastatingly handsome, but how do you argue with AI? They're smarter than humans, I've been told.
Hold on. We'll put that up as the Discount Liquor Twitter poll question. Get a picture of Jay Billis. He claims he's what was the word?
Devastatingly handsome.
I don't claim handsome.
That. I am that.
Oh, well, no, but I want to see if other people agree. Not that you would care, right? But I'm just curious. How many people find you that handsome? All right. You ready to go?
Sure.
I've been wanting to ask you this for a long time. I watched everything you said when they had the draft lottery, and you made it clear that this is one of the great drafts in 40 years in terms of the depth of it. Make sure I represent your position appropriately.
That's right, especially with the freshmen. It's as deep of a freshman class of high-level talent as I can remember. And, you know, there have been drafts in the past where maybe the top player, the top three players were arguably better than this one, but I just don't recall a draft. And it's not like I have these things cataloged in my head or written down on a, you know, yellow pad. But, you know, to go this deep, and that's why you saw NBA teams tanking, honestly. You know, you get the ninth pick this year. You don't have to trade it. You're going to get somebody really good. And that's why teams were okay with being in the lottery, is because you can get somebody good and really, really build in this one.
So how deep does it go? Because this led me to say, if I'm the Bucks in any discussion about Giannis, I don't want draft picks from other years. I want as many as I can get in this year and maybe the top 30, whatever the number you had is, because I have a chance to get more players at a level that hasn't happened in how many years and might not happen again. So if I could get, I think they have 10 and 15 and 20 and 23, I want to get as many from this year's group based on what you just said to me. Is that a legitimate point?
Yeah, I mean, but in a trade, it can be draft picks. You got to make the money work, and that can be difficult. So, you know, it's probably going to be a combination.
But you would want to go and could and would like to go deeper in terms of what you're getting in this year's draft than anyone you can remember.
Anyone I can remember, yeah. And that doesn't mean, look, there have been so many drafts where you've had guys that were rated high and didn't work out, and then you got guys that were second-round picks, whether it's Jalen Brunson or Draymond Green or Nikola Jokic, and they turn out to be all NBA players.
We saw him play in college. There's no way I thought he was that good. Hart was the star and leader of that college team, or at least I thought so. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, I thought he was going to play in the NBA and do well. I did not see him being an all-star or an all-NBA player, and I think that's probably true across the board. I know Jay Wright has said he didn't see this. I think his dad, Rick Brunson, who played in the NBA, has said he didn't see this. You know, I don't think anybody could have counted on this. But that's sort of the beauty of the draft in a lot of ways is we all think we know and we don't. You have beliefs and you try to make informed judgments, but nobody knows. We don't know in recruiting, you know, how many McDonald's All-Americans every year wash out and aren't what we thought. And then a guy who was ranked outside the top 100. I like more in your area, you know, Keaton Wagler at Illinois wasn't ranked in the top 150 coming out of high school, and now he's going to be a top 10 pick in a little over a year from when he left high
school. But it wows you when somebody treats the NBA like it's college. You know, that it just it's too hard to do, and he's done it. I mean, I know when Wade came in, I'm not saying he's Dwayne Wade, but like his first year, like he's treating the NBA like it's Conference USA. You can't do that. But
but it was a process for Jalen Brunson. Like, it didn't happen right away. You know, he was with Dallas, and then you know, I remember, I think it was Luka Doncic got injured or was out for a period of time, and Brunson jumped up. He was averaging about 15, 16 a game, and then he started averaging over 20. And he was unrestricted free agent, whatever it was. And then he had a chance to go on the market and wound up getting a big deal to go to New York. But when he went to the Knicks, there were a lot of people in our business that were like, what are they doing? Like, this is not a good idea. You know, they kind of crapped on the move. And now the argument is he the greatest Knick ever, or is he, you know, should he be considered the best player in the league?
Said. That family is so good. No, he's not the best. Come on. Patrick Ewing's the best Knicks player ever. His dad loved it.
Oh, yeah. But who knows? Like, I don't.
Who cares? Won a title. He's at the top of the list with all of them.
That's the thing. And first of all, it's like saying who's the greatest player ever. It, you know, nobody's going to decide that. You know, and if you took it to another sport so people don't get their underwear in a bunch, If you said who's the greatest golfer of all time, well, one, there's no answer to that. But if you want, you know, some people will say, you know, Jack Nicklaus, he's got 18 majors. When somebody else gets 18, give me a call.
But you know, there's a group.
There's a group, and that's my point. Is that it's an unanswerable question. It's a great barroom argument while we're having a couple of beers and wings and everything. But nobody's ever going to have it decided.
Right, but my number one stat in the NBA is Bill Russell, 11 titles in 13 years. That's everything.
It's a great stat.
After that.
It's a great stat, but that, you know, that doesn't mean he was the greatest player ever.
Yes.
And look, we can sit, you know, like I remember hearing Russell talk about, you know, when Russell played, what were there, 10 teams in the NBA?
Something like that, yes.
And the world was different back then. And that's not to take anything away from it, but then Bill Russell said, well, that means a lot of these guys wouldn't even made the league. But the game is advanced. You know, players are better now than they've ever been. You know, the game is advanced.
All right, let's get to Giannis. If I don't ask you about Giannis, they'll kick me out of the state in sports. You can say whatever you want about Giannis. Say whatever you want. I want to know what you say first.
One of the top five players in the league when he's healthy. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not up for a reasonable debate in my view. And he's won a championship. He's been all NBA. He's a Hall of Famer. So anybody, any team would want him. It's just a question of what you'd have to give up to get him.
And if you were the Bucks and you were in charge, you would tell him, you're going to do what you want, but I would sign you to the Supermax or the whatever that contract is. You would offer that to him.
Well, yeah, but I think everything's run its course in Milwaukee.
Oh, okay.
I have the feeling, and it's just a feeling. They know, and look, if it's going to work out, it'll work out.
No, I think he's gone. You know, like, I think he's leaving.
I think he is too.
Yeah,
but you know, it's like me saying, should a pair stay married? That's why would I care? That's not their business. That's not my business. That's their business. But it feels like it's run its course, and I don't think any reasonable person could argue he hasn't put his time in and put his heart and soul into Milwaukee. If he wants to go, or if Milwaukee wants him to go, or whatever, that's fine. I don't think there should be any hard feelings. He should always be and always will be celebrated in Milwaukee for what he has been and what he is for the franchise and the city. But you know, I think it's time. But that doesn't mean you don't get value for him. And there are going to be opportunities to get really good value. You're never going to get a one-on-one player for player trade and value. It's going to have to be a package. And who knows? Maybe you'll get a group of players that mesh together pretty well that you can build around. And in a period of a couple of years, that you know, you get draft picks and you turn into Oklahoma City. I don't know the answer to that. But when Oklahoma City traded for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He was with the Clippers. And I think Doc Rivers, who you know well, was coaching the Clippers. And Doc was not happy that they were going to trade SGA. And look what he turned out to be for the for the Oklahoma City Thunder. I think you have to look for value in that vein to make it worthwhile.
All right, number 10, anybody that you like. The Bucks have the 10th pick, and I don't know that someone will be around, but do you have a somebody that you like maybe more than other people like, or however I put that?
No, I mean, and that's the beauty of this draft. There's a whole bunch of players that are going to fall down in that range, you know, so whether it's somebody like Braden Burries at Arizona, a guard that can really shoot it, and he's athletic, and or Michael Brown Jr. from Louisville. There are all kinds of guys. It's a guard-heavy draft, but there are all kinds of guys that are going to fall to 10, and they're going to be worthy in another draft of being a top-5 pick, a top-7 pick.
So if you don't get a player in there that's good, you just messed up because you got so many choices that'll probably all be pretty good, right?
Well, you can mess up with the first pick. Like, you can mess up with any pick. And you know, how many times have we seen somebody's drafted 25th and they passed up on it? Like, you know, every team in the NBA had at least one shot, some of them two, to get Jalen Brunson. Every team in the NBA. Every team in the NBA had one. Some teams had two shots to get Nikola Jokic. So, like, we can sit here and say we know all this stuff, but we don't. And that's why, you know, you rely on the homework that you do and the intelligence you gather
but
to
you
make
got
the
a
best
pretty,
possible decision.
You got a pretty good – there's a list that you believe that's longer when you're in there in 5 to 20, and it doesn't mean you'll get the best, but the percentages probably favor you more than, as you stated, the normal year with the long list that exists.
There's more talent this year than in other years, and it goes deeper. But that doesn't mean that just because you're picking at a certain slot that you're going to get the right guy. And so that it's still a difficult challenge, and you want to make sure you make the right decision because, you know, the one thing you can't measure, and I think Jalen Brunson's actually spoken to this, is you can measure out, you know, their size, their weight, their athleticism, their length, all this stuff, but you can't measure their heart and desire.
Yeah.
And some guys just have that winning gene that's usually identified after they've won so much that you can't miss it.
All right, Jay Billis, and now we get to what I always want to talk to you about, college basketball and football and all the money, and you talk about it and you challenge everything people say. I want to let you know, I think I have it figured out. So they had this court case, and they set up the whatever the maximum was, and then they said, but you can do more NIL. Well, the NIL is all made up. NIL should be only fair market value. If you're paying a kid and it's under NIL, but it's not fair market value, then it's not legit. I thought as part of that court case, they had set that up and they've studied and found 1,000 contracts that are all a joke because the NIL is a joke. You can't pay a kid $1 million to go to a grocery store twice because that's not fair market value. So what am I missing? Because it seems to me that would force and make all these contracts not acceptable because they're a violation of the NIL rule, as I thought it was stated in that court case. Take it away, Jay Billis.
What I think is being overlooked here is that the schools are the ones that are paying the players. So this is all being done by the schools. And what they're doing by doing this is saying, we're willing to pay these guys a lot more because we want to acquire this level of talent to play for us. And we'll pay competitive rates for whatever player. And so right now, everything's artificial. And so the court case was a settlement.
Right.
And what the settlement did was it gave a framework to work with. And it's going to be a temporary framework. And I think the intention was that the NCAA was going to get their act together and try to figure it out and put together something that doesn't violate federal law that operates in the space of a multi-billion-dollar entertainment industry. Like, the comparison here, people make a comparison to the NBA or the NFL. They have collective bargaining agreements where the players agree to the salary structure. Right now, there is no agreement.
Right, and the players in college would be stupid to do it because they got the best thing in the world, right?
No, they wouldn't. No, they wouldn't. It would be better to have a collective bargaining agreement because, yeah, it'd be a lot better. because it'd bring more stability, and you'd have
I just want more money. Why do I care about stability?
Well, because you care about the overall enterprise. But right now, you'd rather have the stability.
Okay.
So you don't have the NCAA coming and looking at everything you do, saying, "Wait a minute, you know that your example of the supermarket deal, you know they're doing that, and then you have to go to court over this and that and all that stuff." It'd be better if it were agreed to and stable. But
how do we get that to happen?
The NCAA has to get off its rear end and do something. But right now, what they're doing is they're spending millions of dollars lobbying Capitol Hill to get an antitrust exemption so they can do whatever they want, and they can impose restrictions on athletes only without doing it on coaches or administrators or, you know, facility spending or anything like that.
Which you believe is going to fail because too many representatives of areas where they don't want it to happen in the SEC or Big Ten, or do you think it has a chance of passing?
I think it has a chance. Okay. I don't think it would be good for anyone to do that, and I think it would be profoundly stupid of the United States government to have to step in and run college sports. I don't think they want to do
all right,
that.
Now, my last question, because I've suggested before that you be in charge of the NCAA. It hasn't happened. People just don't listen to me. But if you were, right, I'm putting you in charge, what would you do? Because everybody agrees on only one thing. This is a mess, and it has to be fixed. All right. President of the NCAA, Jay Billis, the mic is yours.
Well, first of all, let me ask you a question. I'm not trying to put you on the spot.
Go
I
ahead,
know
put
what
me on the spot.
What's a mess about college sports?
The mess is there doesn't seem to be any standard that, other than the players, people are happy with. That's the mess. Because I know you're going to say, really, okay, it's not a mess because the games are better, the teams are better. And the player, so what's really the mess? Because college basketball and football, arguably, the quality is probably better than it's ever been, right?
Yeah, yeah. You okay. See, I would argue that. I would argue that it's not a mess.
Okay, go ahead.
Hang on a second. All the games are being played on time.
Yeah.
The money's higher than it's ever been. The business is more profitable than it's ever been. And it's worth more than it's ever been worth. And it's continuing to go up. And ratings are higher than ever. Popularity is higher than ever. It's different than what we're used to. So a lot of old guys like us say, wait a minute, I remember a time when Bronco Nagurski
stayed in Illinois
for 4 years.
So as you as president, you wouldn't do anything. You just let it keep going the way it is.
No, I didn't say that.
Okay.
No, I didn't say that. But we don't need, like right now, there's a bill that's working its way through the Senate side that's being sponsored by Senator Cruz, Senator Cantwell, and Senator Coons. And they're basically, it's a Save College Sports Act. Well, college sports doesn't need saving any more than the movie industry needs saving.
Its problem is it's too popular.
Yeah, it doesn't need saving.
Yes, you're right.
And you know, colleagues like I have and Nick Saban are up there saying, you know, this needs to happen.
Men's
lacrosse
doesn't have any problem.
They don't. And I don't recall anybody saying, I don't recall any of these coaches saying that there was an existential threat to college sports when their salaries went up to $10 million a year.
Coaches, yes.
You know, they weren't worried about the wrestling program when their salary shot up.
So what are you going to do? You're going to do nothing or not? What are you going to do?
No, what I would do is I would collectively bargain with the players.
Okay. Who'd be in charge for them?
The players already have. There's something called the National College Players Association that could operate like a union or a trade association. But that's what I would ask Congress for. I would say, look, we want to run this like the business that it is, and we want to avoid violating federal antitrust law. We want to stop doing that. We've been a serial antitrust violator for over 50 years now. We want to stop doing that. What we would like you to do is help us create a federal pathway for collective bargaining. And Congress could do that and or exempt college athletes from the Fair Labor Standards Act and from the National Labor Relations Act so that they could sign multi-year contracts with the schools directly. Everybody could pay whatever they want. And they don't have to be employees. They could just be independent contractors. And we could avoid any sort of, federal legal issues
this seems
with
good.
Regard
Why
to employment. Because they don't want to, Homer.
Who doesn't want
what
to?
They want, the NCAA, NCAA. Oh, okay. And all the schools.
All right.
They look at this. They look at the billions of dollars being made saying, that's our money. We're not sharing our money with anybody. Like, right. We've never had to pay these players, and we've been paying ourselves with that
money.
And
now all the boosters are paying them, so it's not coming from the schools now, right?
Well, it is. They're running into issues with regard to money because they didn't budget for this. So they've signed long-term contracts with coaches and all that. So they have outlays that they have, and they didn't budget for the players costing this much.
Right.
And they're going, wait a minute, the players, like, it's more important for us to have players than have all these other people, but we've already got contracts with all these other people. We can't just fire a bunch of folks, but in the future they will. And the
administrators know things are different, right?
Well, they're different already, but the administrators know that. And that's why they're going to Congress, because they're going, if we don't limit the players, then pretty soon they're going to start cutting our jobs because the players are more valuable than we are. Everybody knows it. And so they're going to say, we don't need 30 athletic directors. We don't need all these people. Like, we need players. And we need resources on the field and on the floor. We don't need folks in offices.
And then there might be that collective bargaining possibility that you speak of, or no?
Well, I think it's gonna. I think at some point, like, you know, if one of these federal bills goes through, one of these congressional bills goes through, it'll hurt athletes. Because that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to limit what athletes make when they're not trying to limit anything else. And I'd actually be okay with Congress getting involved if they said, look, here's what college sports is. The money's gotten out of control. And so coaches, you're going to be limited to $2 million. That's all you can make. And if you want to make more than that, go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Players, you're going to be limited to this. Staff sizes are going to be limited to this. And we're gonna run this business in line with our rhetoric and our stated values. Because one of the things that people don't think about is, like, think about in your state the number of Division II and Division III institutions you have there. And all of them have 25 sports. How do they run 25 sports when they don't have the revenue?
And I play tennis. I think all these should be club sports. I don't know how they think that – you know, that this is supposed to happen, and or they become Division III and they don't create enough money. But that's, I know,
well,
I'm an odd person
to
say that.
They do it because it's in their interest to do it. Like, playing big-time college sports, that's why so many small schools want to be involved in that, even though they know they can't compete
at the
highest level.
Whatever. Yeah.
Well, yeah, they wind up, they have a more engaged donor base and alumni base and all that. And if they were, you know, like, look, the University of Chicago, which is not far from you, had the first Heisman Trophy winner in 1939, Jay Berwanger.
They left the Big Ten and said, we can do it on our own.
And
nobody knows, you know, they exist.
Exactly. They're one of the top academic institutions in the world, but they're not selling a lot of T-shirts.
All right, Jay, you have set a record for being over. Like, we're supposed to be that. I don't care, because I want this to be online so people can listen to it and better understand. The last thing that you want to tell all the people who follow college basketball and college football that you think they need to know most in your 60 seconds to help them understand. Take it away.
They don't need to understand. I don't really follow the NFL's collective bargaining agreement. I don't know how their collective bargaining agreement works.
So just enjoy it?
I don't care. I watch the games. I enjoy football. I enjoy watching baseball, and I'm not worried about how free agency works. That's fine. You know, when somebody says, hey, this guy's a free agent, whatever. Like, we'll deal with that later. I want to watch the finals.
Right. And they're still watching. And when they stop watching, then call me, right?
Right. And it's like, you know, when you watch the Indy 500, are you going, hey, what's the carburetor situation? Like, how are they doing that? What's the fuel injection rules? Like, forget it. Just you're watching the race.
And you're still entertained by it. Yeah. All right. That was less than 60 seconds. Are you doing the draft, or are you still?
Yeah. I'm doing the draft.
Do I ask you now, what's the tease? Will you say then who you think should be the first player?
Well, I mean, who I think should be the first player, like, there are three guys that are vying for the number one pick.
Yeah.
Darren Peterson of Kansas is the most talented player in the draft. And I would take him number one.
Wow. But even though he's got baggage bigger than a 7-day trip to Europe.
He doesn't have baggage.
Oh, okay.
He just didn't, you know, he had a cramping issue.
To me,
that's not baggage.
All right.
It's like saying Caleb Wilson had baggage because he got injured.
That's why I ask you. All right.
And A.J. DeBonta looked like he was built in a lab to play in the NBA from BYU. And then Cameron Boozer of Duke is the best pure basketball player in the draft. All those guys have a chance to be all NBA.
And it's all you're on Tuesday, Wednesday, whatever. I forgot. I haven't even looked what day.
Yeah, Tuesday, Wednesday, 23rd, 24th.
And you don't know this, but you have just been on ESPN National because we were supposed to be there a couple minutes ago. You're the best. Golf balls coming. I have the new Homer golf balls. You know what they are?
Great range balls?
No. They're Titleist, but these people I give them to say I don't need golf balls. So I created a Titleist golf ball that says thank you on it, which means you can use them if you want. But I already sent you some? Oh, okay.
You sent me some last year.
All right, we get some more this year. It's an even better one. And then if you don't want them, that's fine. Give them to somebody else to thank them. They don't need to know where you got them.
I only need one sleeve a year.
Yeah. You play in that tournament. Are you better than Rodgers yet?
Than Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah.
No.
Are you getting better?
But I'm better looking.
You're better looking, yes. All right, there we go. Is Jay Billis better looking than Aaron Rodgers? Excellent. We got to go. I'm the latest. You're the latest it's ever been. ESPN National in progress coming up soon. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you, Homer.
Is Jay Billis better looking than Aaron Rodgers? He says he is. Do you agree or disagree? Next.
More of the Homer Hour coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.